All right. Hello and welcome to the Brown Sports Convos podcast. It's been a while, but we're breaking down the latest news. I'm Ethan Jobson. I'm joined here by a couple guys.
I'm David Cody.
I am Alex Vang Carver.
Yeah, and so if you've listened to this podcast before, you probably know that the group we have here is a lot of very football focused guys.
Yeah,
you don't mind me calling you guys that.
It's a football group for sure.
So I think we should just jump right into the latest news in the NFL world, which is the Russell Wilson situation. As you may have heard, Russell Wilson, the longtime franchise quarterback, Super Bowl winning quarterback for the Seahawks, has demanded a trade. And
we'll get into that.
Yeah.
What were you saying?
Oh no, that was basically the gist of it.
Yeah. So the complication is that Russell Wilson hasn't exactly requested a trade. The word out of Seattle now is that he like explicitly hasn't requested a trade, but he has made them aware that, you know, if they want to trade him, whatever, he would be chill with that, and he gave them a list of teams he would go to, which
that is probably the most Russell Wilson possible way to request a trade I think I've ever heard.
Totally. And I was saying the other day, like, this is it's a really bad way to request a trade. The point of requesting a trade is to use the leverage you have as a player to make them trade you. There's usually no middle ground when requesting a trade that Russell Wilson is trying to like play here. I don't know. Maybe he's just so like, he just really doesn't want to make the Seattle fans mad at him. Who knows?
I definitely think that's part of it, is like Russell Wilson is terrified of them not trading him and like doesn't want to be known as the villain. Because that's not his brand, you know, that's not his personality.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think part of it could be brand, but I think my read on the situation is more so this is like a preliminary threat. This is saying, I'm not demanding a trade right now, but you think about the situation he's been in for the past few years. They just haven't done much to improve as a team since for like at least the past 3 years, if not longer. So this, to me, it reads kind of like him saying, look, you guys really need to get your act together, or like at some point I am going to look for a trade. And so right now this is just posturing, saying, hey, I'd be open for a trade. These are the teams I'm looking at. But I think this is really more a demand on Seattle to say, hey, draft some O-line, get me a defense on the other side of the ball that can help out when we play complimentary football. And let's make this a team that actually works. That's my read on the situation.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think he's right. I mean, he's rightly frustrated by the fact that they haven't given him an O-line really since he's gotten there in 2012. Like, even when the team was dominant, it was almost in spite of the O-line rather than because of it. I think the timing is weird given the breakout of DK Metcalf. It's odd to see this happening a little bit now that he does have a clear number one receiver. But at the same time, offensive line is important, and the team appears to be just unable to get over like an early playoff hump. So maybe this is the kick they need. Who knows?
I mean, they looked really bad, to be fair, in that Rams playoff game. Like, mm-hmm. I kept waiting for that team to break out. Even going into the playoffs, I still thought they were on the verge of, you know, maybe going on a run. And, like, I mean, Russell didn't look good either, but, like, the entire offense looked horrific.
This might also be a situation where there's a bit of a disconnect between Russ and Pete Carroll. Because, you know, one of the things that's been a thing in football for the past couple of years is the whole let Russ cook movement. Like, they've been really trying to lean into the run game and like keep the ball out of Russ's hands for some reason, invested all these like upside running backs So it might be a little bit of, hey, there's a little bit of disconnect between me and Carol, and pressure towards the organization to be like, in coming down the line, if it comes to a situation where it's me or Carol, I just need you guys to know that I'm willing to walk out the door. Does anyone remember off the top of their head? I know the teams you listed. I know it's the Raiders, the Bears, Indianapolis, and the Cowboys.
Yeah,
not Indianapolis. I know the other three are right, though.
Yeah.
Were the Jets on the list? Weren't the Jets reported to be on the list initially?
I think reports that came out shortly afterward also named the Jets and the Dolphins as potential landing spots as well. And the Dolphins would be scary. The Dolphins would be my nightmare scenario for Russ.
If Russ came down to Florida, that would be big trouble.
Yeah.
Problem is, I think in order to do that, like, this, Seattle's going to have to get something pretty significant back. That I don't
know
Miami has to offer them. I think
it would be Tua plus
Russ out is if they get like a legitimate quarterback back, which I think would limit them to like the Raiders and the Cowboys.
You don't think Tua in picks would be enough? Tua in like three firsts?
I don't think so, because I mean, Seattle's not trying to rebuild. If Seattle was like trying to tank and rebuild, yeah, absolutely take Tua in a couple firsts. But that's not what they're looking to do here. If there's a situation where they send Russ out the door, it's going to have to be actual like fair compensation that's going to make them better long term, or at least not hamper them long term, which Tua would hamper them long term.
You think so?
I mean, there's a chance that like he becomes like a really good quarterback, but when you have a proven thing in the building, you don't send that out for a guy in his second year who's a southpaw, you know, like,
right?
Just doesn't make a lot of sense.
So what
is his rookie year?
So what type of package do you think they would do, if any? Like, I think when I think about this scenario and I run through trade scenarios, and I always go through the line like, no, Seattle wouldn't do that. That wouldn't be good for Seattle. Just about every trade package I think of. And then I realize I just don't think they're going to trade Russell Wilson is my opinion. Do either of you guys feel like there is a package that would pry him from Seattle, or if they'll just hold, if this is just news?
I don't think there is, but I think if there was one, again, I think it would come from the Raiders in the form of Derek Carr and like three picks, or it would come from the Cowboys again in the package of Prescott and like three or four picks.
Ethan, what do you think? Do you think this is going to happen at all?
The only reason that I think it could, is I don't think it will, but the only possibility is that like what we just mentioned is that like, Pete Carroll has already managed everything in kind of a weird way. He's already obsessed with the run. So maybe if he doesn't value Russell the way we do, if some team that does more blows him away with a package, maybe it happens. But
right. What do they have in their running back room right now? Is it still Chris Carson there?
I think Chris Carson, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, because they drafted the kid from San Diego State, who never really panned out. I mean, last year in the playoffs, it was Marshawn friggin' Lynch in the backfield for them.
They just re-signed Alex Collins, so that's...
Oh, he's okay. He from Arkansas? He's fine.
And then I think Rashad Penny might still be in the building, but, you know.
Right, right.
He's not a bell cow back or anything like that.
Right.
But anyway, speaking of mismanagement of a team and a quarterback wanting out, the Deshaun Watson situation is still up in the air. Apparently, yeah. It seems like the Texans, again, strangely, don't want to trade Deshaun Watson, which is very bizarre at this point, in my opinion. I don't know what you guys think.
The recent event that happened in this saga was apparently Deshaun Watson met with the new head coach of the Texans, whose name I don't remember. And if you tell it to me, I'm going to immediately forget again because I've never heard of this man. Apparently he met with Deshaun Watson, and Deshaun Watson said, "I'm not going to play for the Texans next year." And he was like, "All right, cool." But the Texans front office, apparently, according to like Shefty and them, the Texans front office is very adamant that they're not looking at offers for Deshaun Watson. To me, it reads like they're just in denial of the fact that they're going to have to trade away their franchise quarterback. And I think, I don't know, I think they're going to get a haul that they need for him, because if anything, they need draft picks. But yeah, it's just been a bizarre collapse just front to back for this organization.
Yeah, I kind of hate speculating about like this situation, just because like I can't speculate about the Texans in a way I would about any other NFL franchise in terms of like a certain kind of logic,
right? Because like, they don't have any.
No idea what's going through the minds of any of them, even in terms of like, I mean, they're definitely stupid, but like, even in terms of stupidity, like I don't get their motivation. At this point, yes, you're not going to get value. Like, you could never get the value for Deshaun Watson.
Right.
Because he's Deshaun Watson. But like, at this point, there has to be a package out there that like allows you to move forward as a franchise, at least. It's not going to put you in a good situation, but you're not going to be in a good situation no matter what. At least it's a place to rebuild from. And the difference between this and the Russell Wilson situation, I'd say, is like I agree with everyone that says it's going to happen no matter what. Like I think Deshaun Watson will like hold out or something. Like everything he's done makes me think he's willing to play hardball.
I think the key thing there is that the Texans get a deal before the draft. I think they would really be screwing themselves over if they don't get Deshaun Watson out before the draft, because it's a really good quarterback class. And if you want, you know, to get an immediate young quarterback replacement, the draft is the way to do it. But yeah, I think I do also see a scenario where this could drag up beyond that point and there could be a holdout type situation.
Agreed.
Yeah, last I understood, there are a couple deals out for Deshaun and the Texans just haven't responded to offers. I think if I was giving them the absolute most amount of credit, I would say that they maybe are gambling on like a situation with what happened with the Vikings a few years ago, where like when Teddy Bridgewater got hurt and then they had to bring in someone last minute. Or like an Andrew Luck situation, if someone like randomly retires and a team is scrambling for a quarterback, and right, then that puts the Texans in a position where they can demand more. Again, if I was giving the absolute most credit, which I don't, I think what's going to end up happening is they're going to try to do something on draft night. It's not going to work because everyone knows they have no leverage, and they're going to have to end up either holding on to him and him holding out for the season, or giving him up for way less than he's worth, just to get him off the books and get him out of the building. I don't think it's going to go well for them. At this point, he's made it so clear that he's just not going to play. They need to just take the best deal that's being offered to them and move on, make the most of it.
Yeah. The only leverage they have is that a bunch of other teams want Deshaun Watson. Like the Texans don't have any value on the Texans with Deshaun Watson. So The only reason other teams would have to give them like multiple firsts is that there might be another team that would offer multiple firsts. And as free agent starts to transpire, as some of these other quarterback situations settle, as the draft goes through, there are less and less of these teams that would still be in the market for shelling out for Deshaun Watson. So they lose their leverage that way. I think they have to come to terms really quickly sooner rather than later that Deshaun Watson is not going to be their quarterback next year. And I think this could be a disaster if they don't do that.
Fully agree. I'm going to talk real quick about the Cowboys, which I think is one of the less interesting quarterback situations because everyone obviously expects them to sign Prescott. But I think there's a scenario playing out here that is very similar to what happened between Kirk Cousins and the Washington football team a few years ago.
Hmm.
And what's happening is, you know, Kirk, they never got a long-term deal with him. He played on multiple franchise tags, and then he ended up dropping out or leaving the team, going into free agency and signing for a ton of money. That is the path that Prescott is on right now. He already played on the franchise tag last season. Hurt, obviously. If they don't get a long-term deal done, which they might, but if they don't, then he'll be playing on it again this season. And then next season, he's going to have to hit free agency. So I think between that and the Deshaun Watson situation and the fact that Tom Brady has left New England, which of course he did last year, I think that we are looking at the end of an era of dynasties. I think dynasties are out the window because long-term quarterback deals and long-term quarterback commitment are also out the window. I think the 2004 class was the last class of players where you have a quarterback sticking with a team for, you know, 7, 8+ years. And from here on out, it's going to transition more towards an NBA style thing where Super Bowl windows are like 2 years max. Quarterbacks are shifting around all the time. Teams are doing weird things with cap and like dealing with lots of dead money and always looking to upgrade instead of doing the thing traditionally where it's like you sign Tom Brady for another 3 years, you sign Ben Roethlisberger for another 4 years, you sign Eli Manning for another 4 years, you know, that type thing. I think we're moving away from that and into what we're looking at now, where Deshaun Watson wants out, where Kirk Cousins was on the move, where even Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, they sign these huge deals and then a couple years later they both get shipped off. I think it's a different landscape now, and we're kind of looking at the beginning of what is to come in the NFL.
I get where you're coming from, but I feel like there are some differences. Like in the NBA, I think it's just like it's so much easier in that like superstars dominate a game that basically like with my Nets, like the KD, Kyrie, and Harden can just like text each other and be like, we want to be on the same team, figure out a way to make it happen because any team will. And like instantly they're like championship contenders. Whereas like, if you want to try to do the same thing with the NFL, you're sacrificing a lot of stability. And even if there are like twice as many guys who are like top players who are in on it, that still might not necessarily make a team a contender, depending on the positions of those guys, you know? I think about like what the Dream Team when they compared themselves to the Heat back in the day, and then it just kind of fell apart, you know. But even now, it's like, for example, is Mahomes really gonna, assuming Reed stays there a few more years, is he really gonna want to, I don't know, unite with like, I don't know, like I just think there's a lot more. There's a lot more like foundation within the franchises and teams than there is in the NBA.
Yeah. No, I feel you. I don't think we're ever going to get to a situation where we get NBA style super teams. Like, I don't think we're ever going to get a team that has like DK Metcalf and Michael Thomas and Saquon Barkley and Patrick Mahomes, like all on the same team. Right. Like, I don't see that happening, but I do think that some of the long-term stability of the past is going to be out the window. Mahomes might be the exception because he does have that like huge ass contract, but Patrick Mahomes is the exception to a lot of including the laws of physics,
right?
But I think for the rest of the NFL, that I don't know, it looks like and feels like that's kind of where we're moving towards.
Yeah, and I think that's also kind of reflective of the way teams are doing their team building now, because you've seen so many of these teams take advantage of the quarterback rookie contract window, where they really load up on other positions because they don't have to give their quarterbacks huge contracts. And then to that point, you now start to see teams, you know, the most quarterbacks stop being as valuable to your team building beyond, you know, once they get into year five, year six. So, I mean, beyond the obviously like increasing culture of player movement that has kind of permeated the NFL from the NBA. I think it's also starting to look a little more advantageous to teams to move on from quarterbacks more quickly as well. I think the way the recent it's not recent, but the amount of money QBs usually get on that second contract is going to make these first couple years of this process really messy. And we're seeing that with Carson Wentz and potentially Russ would be like a $39 million dead cap hit in Seattle if he were to get traded. And I know Carson Wentz is like at least $20 million in dead cap this year. But I think QB is right around that window of like their fourth season or their fifth season moving, might become more common in the future just because of the way teams try to build now.
I think another factor that contributes into that is looking at what has happened with some of the more recent iteration of like that 2004 class and like the Peyton Manning style teams. If you look at like Green Bay and Seattle and the way that they failed to build teams around them and become complacent with the quarterbacks, I think mm-hmm. that would be a large part, because nobody wants to be the next Aaron Rodgers where you win a Super Bowl in 2010 and then you just don't have a team like for the rest of your career, you know?
Right.
No one wants to be in the Drew Brees situation where they went like 7-9 for like 4 years in a row. Like, I don't think that's a thing that the new wave of quarterbacks are going to put up with.
Right.
When they see their counterparts in the NBA. Again, I don't think we're going to have NFL super teams, but when they see counterparts in the NBA doing the types of things that they're doing, they're going to demand more out of their teams and
right.
their organizations. And I think that's what we're seeing with Watson. And I think that's what potentially we're seeing with Wilson. And potentially we could see that with Prescott as well.
Yeah. And I think also like a big difference between the NFL and the NBA, and the reason why NBA players are able to use that kind of leverage, is the guaranteed contract in the NBA. And the only real position and type of player who has that kind of power just in terms of their contract in the NFL is a quarterback. So it's an interesting kind of long-term shift we could be seeing.
Mm-hmm. So talking about that future, let's talk about the future quarterbacks of the NFL. David, I know you wanted to talk about the draft class. That's definitely, as a Jets fan, I've been doing my share of research on it.
Yeah. So let me pose you a question. Trevor Lawrence goes number one, like we're expecting him to, like the whole world knows he will. Who do the Jets grab when their pick rolls around? Who would you like to see the Jets grab?
Okay, so these, first of all, those are two different questions. But also, is this assuming that the Jets stay at number two?
Do you want them to stay at number two?
No.
No. Or, all right. So that could answer the question.
Actually, you know what? Actually, I might, but not to draft a quarterback, to draft Penei Sewell.
Okay. That makes sense.
But only because we have another pick later in the first round, and I think this is a quarterback class. My thoughts are kind of complicated.
Let me narrow the question.
All right. Yeah.
The Jets at number two pick a quarterback. They pick either Fields, Lance, or the kid from BYU whose name will always escape me because it's generic as hell.
Zach Wilson.
Yeah. Or Mac Jones, if you're feeling spicy. Which of those guys would you be happiest if the Jets picked it to?
I don't really like any of those guys. Like, I guess Fields, because, like, I'll just defer to the scouts. Like, they've said he's, like, the top prospect for since he was in high school. He looked great against Clemson.
Yeah, he did.
I'll disclose it. I'm a rampant Kyle Trask defender. I feel like since everyone seems to think we can get him at the very least in the late first round, if not like later in the draft, like I'm fine with that. Like I think I don't see any reason that any of these other, except for Lawrence. Lawrence is clearly, in my mind, much better than the rest of the class. I kind of think that all the other quarterback prospects are like fine, but like nothing jumps out to me. I don't know. I don't want to go through them all, but like, I just feel that there's a huge hype around a lot of these prospects right now. And there's also a huge hype around a certain kind of quarterback. Now that like a position has really been remade, especially in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And I really, if there's one and I don't want to like crap on prospects, because I think any of them, especially because I think any of them could be good and like prove me wrong. But like, if there's one person that I think the hype around them most is conflicting with what he's shown so far, is Zach Wilson. I'm not very high on Zach Wilson.
I didn't watch much of his games, so I didn't pick up on any of like what the buzz was around him.
Yeah, to be fair, I have not. I go through stats and like watch games periodically, but I'm not one of those people who is like consuming all the time right. throughout the season, was watching right. every game. But right. like, okay.
But your team's picking too, so you got to do your research at the very least.
Yeah, yeah. With Zach Wilson, the thing with me is that he was pretty good his freshman year, not special, but he was good. His sophomore year, he wasn't good at all. Or, I don't know, is he a junior? His first year starting, he was fine. And his second year, he was just not good at all. Then he played a stronger schedule. Or no, sorry. He played a weaker schedule this year and had like amazing stats. But what bothers me is that people will talk like, oh, you know, BYU had an easier schedule, but he put up great stats. Like, we don't know like how much that affected things. And like, I understand that to an extent, but like, we did see a little, it's not all theoretical. We did see against Coastal Carolina, a much better team than, which tells you something, that they were like a lot, they were substantially better than most of BYU's schedule. Like he was nowhere near as effective. So, and I just watch his tape and you'll see him make these throws where he just is, his technique does not look great, but he'll make those like Mahomes-esque, like perfect throws. And I just wonder to an extent, like how much are we now just saying are we valuing like ability to get over poor techniques and make some catches over what, in my opinion, a few years ago, we would have said that's just a lucky throw. Like, especially since we statistically saw it borne out that when he played against tougher competition, like he was substantially worse. And I think that's what has me hesitant about the like movement to basically like so many mocks are having us, the Jets, take him at number 2 overall.
Yeah. I've seen him mocked above Justin Fields a lot. Which I don't really agree. I don't know if I would ever have a QB from BYU or, well, he's a QB from Ohio State, which is a whole other list of problems as well.
Top quarterbacks really are not even beyond top, really. Like none of these schools that these prospects are coming from are really known as great quarterback factories. Like,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, Trevor Lawrence in a way, but Clemson wasn't an anything factory until like 10 years ago.
I defer when I'm talking about this class from like two on, because just like, I feel like we all know what we're talking about with Lawrence. Like,
right.
Like, I think I was down on Fields because at a certain point there was the like, Fields is actually better than Lawrence hot takes.
Right.
Which I think we've successfully just like shut those people up. Like I'm very happy that like we've managed at least at the very top of this draft to like manage to avoid all the like dumb hot takes that are just clearly, in my mind, clearly wrong about like Trevor Lawrence is overrated. Like, I mean, he's not perfect, but like,
right,
it's hard for me to envision you putting out a better resume over his a college career that he has, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But actually, sorry, Alex, you want to get in?
Yeah, I was just going to ask real quick what you guys think your top needs going into the draft are for your teams.
I was actually just about to ask you what you think about Denver going to the draft, because they pick above New England. I know that because every time I read a mock draft, I look at their name nervously to see if they picked a QB.
I don't think we're going to take a QB. I think we got to roll with Locke for at least one more year, especially because we get Courtland Sutton back this next year, who is, you know, out for most of the year.
Yeah.
I think we're probably going to go cornerback. I think we have to go cornerback, especially after we let AJ Bouye go.
Mm.
Shallow there last year. And now that we cut one of our starters, like, we're desperately in need. So I think that's the move. You take quarterback up top or cornerback up top and then try to fill out the rest of the defense and the secondary through the rest of the draft.
Are there any guys you like? Where does Denver pick?
I'm not
following 12, 11?
Closely enough this year. 12th sounds about right, though.
Yeah, yeah.
High enough to get possibly the top cornerback, at least like the two cornerback on the board, though.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a good year for cornerbacks. Pat Surtain is as close to a can't-miss cornerback, I think, as you can get. Ethan, what do you think about the Jets? I know we've talked about it a little bit, but you want them to trade down. What positions do you see them needing?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I could, as I said, I could see us, since we already have two first-rounders, staying at two if we think there's a blue-chip prospect. But I think the fact that there are so many quarterbacks and quarterback-needy teams that might trade up for it, and the fact they don't necessarily want us to take a quarterback high, makes me think maybe we could trade down. In terms of positional needs for us, so you know that like clip that people use on the internet from the R. Kelly interview where he goes,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
All of them. Yeah, that applies to chess position needs right now. yeah, we could use a running back. We could use a cornerback. We could use offensive line help and receivers and like, oh man.
Yeah.
I still am high on taking Sewell or an offensive lineman early.
You have quite the O-line with Sewell and whoever you picked last year.
Becton. Yeah. Becton. Yeah. The only thing is I think Becton would have to shift to the other side of the line, but I still think it'd be worth it. What my theory, though, because you mentioned earlier, you asked me what you think we would do. And what I think is that we're going to trade down like a few picks, maybe with the Panthers, since they seem to want to be, want to move on from Teddy Bridgewater. And I'm convinced that Joe Douglas is going to take Trey Lance. Just because of, he started off with the Ravens in his front office career. They took Flacco during that.
Yeah.
He wasn't there, I think, when the Eagles took Wentz, but he didn't they didn't move on from him while they were there. And then last year, the Jets in the top half of the draft in the fourth round took James Morgan, who was like by far the worst pick and obviously a bad pick from the start of all Douglas's picks. And like the only thing I can use, like the way, only way I can understand that pick is basically that Joe Douglas just really likes tall, small school quarterbacks, which I really think that, like, given that Trey Lance, unlike most years, is that prototypical quarterback who is actually, like, considered a top prospect, my tinfoil hat theory is that's where we're going. But, of course, maybe I'll be proven completely wrong. We'll see.
Joe Douglas and John Elway must be cousins. Quarterback. You drafted a quarterback out of Memphis. Like, dear God.
Anyway, it's time for me to talk about the Patriots.
Oh, Lord.
Buckle up, everyone. The Patriots' primary need is Thomas Edward Patrick Brady. Beyond that, we could... For me, I think at 15, the Patriots should be hoping one of the top four quarterbacks falls to them, and if not, it has to be a pass catcher. And I know Bill has done very poorly at the top of the draft, particularly with receivers. But this is also the thing to keep in mind is that I'm going to sound like a dick, but top of the draft is very relative. This is a much different, picking at 15 is a much different kind of top of the draft than picking at 28. So when picking very, very high in the first round, Belichick actually does quite well. It doesn't happen often, but he has never really missed picking that high. So I really don't know. I think the dream is if Devontae Smith somehow falls, which in some mocks do have him falling that far. I think every team would have to be insane for that to happen. But if QB isn't an option at 15, if four QBs go before 15, I think you have to look for one of the Bama receivers if either of them are left. So Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle or the tight end Pitts from Florida would also fill a massive, massive gap. But if he wants to go defense, as Bill loves to do high in the draft, the Pats have some significant holes up front. They're getting Dante Hightower back, which should help at the linebacker spot. But they're really lacking at kind of the inside positions on the defensive line and kind of the inside linebacker spots as well.
Yeah, that's another consideration in a lot of mock drafts for Denver is inside linebacker. Pretty much all the mock drafts have them taking either a defensive back or an inside linebacker. The guy out of Parsons out of Penn State is kind of the consensus.
Yeah, Michael Parsons.
Like, literally never cared about the inside linebacker position. Like, there have been multiple times where, like, we could have drafted one, or he could have paid out in free agency, or he could have even just re-signed guys, and he's like, nope, send him out the door.
Yeah, he loves a pass rusher, though.
He loves a good pass rusher, and he loves a good cornerback. So
yeah, yeah.
I think that's probably where we'll end up going.
Cool.
That's – of course Devontae Smith is going to fall to the Patriots. Like, that's the most NFL thing possible. I hate the NFL draft, honestly, just because, like, I feel like so – well, I love it, but, like – every year there's something where there's a guy I just watched in college, and it's always like when people are watching the actual games during the season, everyone's like, this guy's clear blue chip talent. Then for months, everyone picks apart every little thing about those people and convinces themselves some random guy who no one ever watched the actual games of is better. And then they fall in the draft, and then everyone is so surprised. I watched it happen with Deshaun Watson. I watched it happen last year with CeeDee Lamb. Like, I wouldn't be at all surprised if that happened with Devontae Smith. There are more examples I'm sure I could think of if I just went year by year, but like,
I mean, the only reason that I don't think that could happen with Devontae Smith is I don't think there is anything to pick apart about him. I think any
people say he's undersized. That's what I keep seeing.
Isn't he like 6'1"?
I've seen him like the third wide receiver.
Yeah, I've seen people. I've seen people. I mean, obviously the kid from LSU, who had an incredible season with Joe Burrow a year ago and then opted out, is kind of on equal footing with him because they both put up insane numbers.
But then that brings up we talked about Sewell, it was the same thing. He had one of the best years an offensive lineman could have. He opted out. Everyone said, oh yeah, he's going top of the draft. And I haven't seen him falling that far in most mocks, but now it's oh, he might be the second tackle off. I'm like, why? Where are you? Did you just here's what my problem is. It's just clearly because they were so elite as prospects, you spent all this time finding all the minutia until you found something to knock them on or something to worry about, which you in a way you never would have. There's no way you're evaluating even the fifth best player in the position in the same way.
Right.
I don't know.
It's a crapshoot for sure. Yeah. The NFL draft. All right. With that, do we want to move along to our 2 cent finish? Our final segment where we each just talk about something that's been pressing on our minds. I would like to go first if you guys don't mind.
Go ahead.
I'm a big alternative football league guy. I love it when someone tries to make a new football thing happen. I love Canadian football when it's on my television. I love arena football in concept. It's all wonderful. Fan-controlled football, a new upstart football league featuring quarterbacks Johnny Manziel and Quentin Flowers from USF and a bunch of really cool players has a weekly fantasy draft for all of their team rosters. So the teams are different roster-wise week to week. It's a 50-yard field. It's indoors. For their extra points are just a one-on-one pass pattern with a receiver in a corner from the 1 yard line. Very, very fun, exciting football. I would give that a little check out if you really miss football that badly like I do.
Is this happening now?
Yeah, for sure. Their games are on.
Have I not heard about this yet?
Their games are on Saturdays. They stream them on Twitch.
God, I feel bad for Johnny Manziel.
I do too.
Their games are on Twitch?
Yeah, they stream them on Twitch, dude. The Poggers Football League, dude.
Poggers Football League. That is insane.
All right, that's my 2 cent finish.
I'll go next. I think I kind of already went over it when I talked about the end of the era, but for an actual 2 cent finish, I think I will say what happens this year in quarterback free agency is going to have long-term impacts, not just in who's on what teams and how that affects things, but in how negotiations happen going forward.
Yeah.
What's about to happen, however the Houston situation goes down with Watson, unless the Texans just trade him out, no problem. It's going to set standards for years to come, and we're going to end up seeing similar situations with quarterbacks years and years down the road. And that's all I got for that.
For sure. Yeah, it does feel like a very precedent-setting situation.
All right. Is it my turn now?
Uh-huh.
All right. So the Celtics are bad. This NBA season has mostly gone according to form, I'd say. the Jazz are a bit better than people thought. But like, we've seen teams do this well in the regular season before. There are other teams that have underperformed. The Heat are not doing well either. They obviously weren't the greatest regular season team last season either, but they've still underperformed relative to that. Same with like the Nuggets and stuff, but definitely the stories I am most interested in are the fact that the Knicks are being led by Julius Randle as being like a legitimate playoff team. They're currently tied with the Toronto for fifth in the East. So that puts them above now the Celtics, who I fully accept that I'm completely biased in this, that I only want misery for Boston sports teams. But I legitimately think that team needs to do something major. Like, not just get a role player. And I've been hassling Sam in the chat about, like, this is the time that I think Boston needs to here's what I'll say is that the Celtics are a kind of team that has slid by, in my opinion, by doing the moves that when you see them in terms of just like the values gained and values lost, you say, okay, overall, that's a good move. But at a certain point, you need to take a risk to become a contender. The Nets are by no means definitely going to be a success, even though they've been doing well lately. The Harden trade, was it really a win? Like, we gave up a lot of assets for that, but this is what our franchise needed right now, because at some point you have to go for it and go for a championship. The Celtics, to me, the only time they've really gone for that, you could argue, was with Kyrie. And Kyrie hadn't proven yet that, and well, still hasn't really, that he can be a number one on a team and can take that team to the promised land. And the Celtics really still don't have that, any proof of that with Tatum and Brown. I think that if they went for a star in terms of like going for a player at a position of need who is a star, like Karl Anthony Towns, I think, or that's just an example though. Like, this is the time that the Celtics need to decide if they want to keep just winning trades or making moves that will like look good on Twitter or like look good on the ESPN shows for the week after or whatever, or if they want to like take a risk and make a move that for the kind of player that can completely change that team. And that's just my thoughts.
For sure. It does kind of feel like they've hit some kind of ceiling. Like, even as LeBron left their conference, they still can't get over that yeah. Home to the finals, you know? Cool. Very cool. I guess I'm doing the outro then, because I'm talking. I'm the one talking right now. Thank you guys for listening. This is a Brown Sports Convos podcast. We have socials. We have a Twitter that's at BRN Sports Convos. We have an Instagram that's at Brown Sports Convos. We have a website that's sportsconvos.com. And then you can find these podcasts exactly where you're listening to this podcast. Yeah.